Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
All right, welcome to Rogues Gallery Comics, Games, and Weather Talk.
Yes.
I don't have any weather talk this week. It's the same weather.
I hate it.
I love right it. Now. I love
it's
it.
Weather
warm.
Talk is engaged. It's mild outside. It's, you know what? Because I had a, I was telling Randy this earlier, because I had a cold recently, and cold weather is not good when you have a cold. I'm kind of liking the mild weather.
Only because you are weak.
What I'm hearing is Dave is now Team Summer Forever.
I see that Nick has now designated himself as the mightiest mortal of them all,
yes.
And everybody else is beta cucks.
Yes.
Obviously. So we will see how he weathers the season.
Yes.
And remember to remind him if he gets a cold, that he needs to power through it.
He begged for this. He looked up at the sky and said, "Zeus, send me snow." Which, you know, we've all been there.
We've all been there.
Yeah. I mean, the lows are going to dip back into the 40s and, like high 30s. So.
Frigid and terrible.
Those are great temperatures.
No. You know what? You know what's good about Winter Wonderland? It's on TV. Snow, Christmas, a white Christmas is great for watching on a screen.
All right, I'm going to move us on. But also, here's my question. Is this our last podcast before Christmas?
Are
we going to be able to get one
in this
week?
Our last podcast before Christmas because we record on Tuesdays, and next Tuesday is Christmas Eve. It's going to be crazy busy.
Yeah.
And then the Tuesday after that is New Year's Eve, which will also probably be pretty busy.
All right. So everybody out there should know we're virtually hugging you.
Yes.
We're virtually giving you gingerbread.
Yes.
We're virtually hugging you again.
I'm not in for the second virtual hug.
Virtually, it's lasting a little long.
Virtually,
you're feeling a little
uncomfortable.
You virtually filed a restraining order against us. but the point is, we're thinking of you, and we thank you for listening. And
yeah.
we're here to provide one last entertaining thing before we get to like New Year's material as we get into that realm after Christmas. And Randy gets to go through his list and say what his favorite things are, and Nick and I cobble something together the day of and say what our favorite things
are. Hey, I was a fan of what we did last year, and we talked about the things we're looking forward to for the year instead of retroactively looking
back. That's hard, though, because we don't actually know what's coming out.
But we have solicitations, and we've got
right.
things.
About last year were we like, this Absolute stuff sounds interesting and things like that?
I don't
that.
Even think Absolute was on our radar.
No.
Was it not
This
yet?
Is the thing. You don't know. They only tell you about
it. Well, Nick said he enjoyed it, though. We must have talked about something.
We talked about...
I don't remember it at all.
Movies and things, too.
Yeah, we talked movies and
I think
TV
Nick, you and I can come up with a few things that we remember for, you know, that have been cool this year, like the trade paperback of Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees, or, you know,
yeah.
we can find some stuff.
I say we do both.
Okay. Yes, I agree. And we'll find some stuff that we surmise and we'll put betting pools on as to whether it's going to be cool or not.
I do have, and I know this is shocking, a list of movies I'm ready to watch next year. So
okay, well, there you go.
All right. We got a couple more weeks of extended holiday hours, opening 8 p.m. on Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yep.
We are, if you're listening to this, we are closing early at 5 p.m. on New Year's Eve and Christmas Eve.
Right.
And we will be closed on Christmas Day and New Year's Day.
Yep.
So that means this Wednesday is normal.
Yep.
Next Wednesday and the Wednesday after, close at 5. Next Thursday's closed.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
Sounded right to me.
Yeah, okay.
Sounded right to me. I was making that sign up for our door, though, yesterday, and I forgot what day Christmas
was. I
was
going to say, it sounds right to you, but you think Christmas is on the 26th.
But then you proofread it, and you also didn't.
But
correct.
But wait a minute. Christmas is Wednesday next week.
Nick is right, and this is why you can't trust me.
All right, let's retract things.
So,
Tuesday we will be open until 5.
Yes.
Or
Wednesday
yes. will be closed.
I got half of it right. I was like, we will be closing at 5 on Tuesdays. Then we'll be open on Christmas Day and New Year's Day, and then close the day after New Year's Day and the day after Christmas Day, just for confusing parts. No, that is not what's happening.
If you have been thrown by this, you just need to come by the store and look at our door.
Yes, the sign is correct.
No matter where you are, just drive to the store real quick.
The sign is correct because, thankfully, Serena, the third set of eyes, was like, you know, these days are wrong.
Or, if you're not sure, text us or email us or whatever. We'll go outside. We'll take a picture of the door and we'll send you the picture.
What if I just take a picture of my door? Doesn't have any hours on it.
Yeah, just the door.
Here's Nick's door.
So, I guess
Are you guys open on Christmas Eve? Here's Nick's door.
I guess the big takeaway is don't trust Dave or I around scheduling.
That's right.
We don't know what day it is.
Unfortunately, I made the sign, so...
Yes. All right. We do still have some of the White Elephant gifts. You can get books or games that are pre-wrapped for, what, 10, 20, and 30 bucks?
Yep. Those have been going over well. People, somebody the other day was particularly appreciative of the work that had gone into it, including Jeanette's labeling of the recommended number of players and the hours it lasts and all that stuff. Yep.
We got a new supplier, Gamer Mats. Yep. So we have a big supply of play mats.
I heard those were doing very well this last weekend.
They're very cool.
Yeah, they are. They're a good collection of artwork ranging from... There's some D&D in there. There's fantasy stuff. There's video games. Mm-hmm. There's it's all really, really cool stuff.
The artwork is very detailed and cool looking.
And if you want to get a sense of the size and the materials, they sent us an extra one that we use at our desk as like our thank
they're,
you for shopping.
They're really good size. They're really nice. Definitely like they're a two-player.
They're little mischievous goblins.
Yes.
Playing D&D.
Yep.
Which describes many of our customers, I think.
Yes. Not us, but our customers.
Because we did have the goblin dice, and those sold like crazy.
Yeah, that's true.
And I know several people who self-identify as D&D playing goblins.
Yep.
We got the Star Trek Lower Decks starters and playmats as well. This is the Universal system. I think the same people that did the Godzilla game. Yep. A few other things. This is their Star Trek Lower Decks. You can play any one of the four characters. There's no T'Pol, I don't think, or whatever.
It's Boimler, Rutherford, Mariner, and...
Tendi.
Yep. Yes. And we have playmats for three of them. Somehow we missed one of the playmats. I don't remember which one.
Yeah, you didn't order Boimler.
Yeah, I missed Boimler. That feels correct.
Yeah.
That's the guy disrespect that Boimler is
out. Womp.
We've got the die RPG scenarios.
Yep. So this is based on the comic die by that
Kieran
guy.
Gillen. Kieran Gillen,
yep. That was the kind of like the Goth Jumanji game. The people sucked into a kind of a weird 90s World of Darkness-y fantasy world.
Yeah.
Kind of a little bit
more.
It's
very literary themed. It has like Lord of the Rings and a bunch of other stuff.
Not literally Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. I mean, there's like Tolkien is mentioned, name dropped in it.
It was like
an influence?
He actually shows up during the actual book.
How weird.
Huh. Okay.
I mean, it sounds Kieran Gillen-y,
the
sort of meta aspect of it, but I have heard good stuff about the actual RPG.
I have too.
Yep. The RPG Dragonbane has a new expansion called Path of Glory, which is was the first major campaign released for the Swedish edition. So this is it's basically a 164-page adventure campaign.
Cool.
For that that game is fun Swedish death metal RPG, but has importantly humanoid ducks.
Yes, that is a playable race. Is the little duckmen? Yep. They look very cool in all the art I see of them.
Yeah. And then we got a board game that's called Lands of Galzir, which it's a open world fantasy adventure board game.
Open world.
Yeah. Yep.
Interesting.
It says it is a open, rich, story rich world.
So you'll like. Wait, what's it called?
Lands of Galzir.
This isn't the one that's the Arthurian rebuild.
No, that one went out of print.
Okay.
This one is this is a game that I think one of our hardcore gamers was super into, and she's been waiting for it for a while.
Yeah, I'd like to look that up.
Anytime that
they like kind of have like a narrative story drift, in there, I'm at least curious to check into it.
I guess the designer did a couple of things called Dale of Merchants and Dawn of Peacemakers, which are games I've never heard of, but they're similar vibes. But it's set in that world. Basically, it's a save and load mechanism. No need for pencil and paper bookkeeping is what it says.
Yep.
Play the game as many times you want. Swap players between sessions. So they're trying to do a little bit of a legacy game, but sort of it sounds like a different take on it.
Okay.
So, yeah. All right. Let's talk about comics week. It is a big comics week.
It's
a very big week.
A lot of number ones
and a lot of big books.
Yep.
And probably worth noting, and I don't know if people have noticed this already, but... Diamond is having some issues.
Yes. It's so prominent that a lot of our customers actually know about it. Like, you know, I think they've just heard it on message boards,
social media. It's definitely making headlines, but then
basically what happened is Diamond Comics Distribution, they're consolidating down to one warehouse, and they're having to do it on a reduced timeline because their landlord makes some last minute moves on them. And so they are handling about as well as Diamond handles anything, which is to say that during the holidays, starting a couple weeks ago, they've been shipping everything late. We have only now been hit by it. We got our Diamond stuff on Monday, when we usually get it the Monday before it actually comes out.
And for us, it's not too impactful because the vast majority of our books we get from a couple other distributors.
Yep.
So Diamond really usually only supplies maybe 4 to 6 titles a week.
Yeah. A random and maybe, you know, some random graphic novels, some random indie publishers, anything from Dynamite, Boom, or Distillery.
Right. Which isn't to say they aren't good books.
Yeah.
It's just, it's not a big percentage of what we carry, so, you know, but apologies for the lateness. Yep. We're dealing with it, and we have no say in the matter.
Yep. So if you, yeah, if you're like, wait, that book came out last week, effectively it didn't. Like, not just to us, but, like, nationwide, these books didn't
hit.
That is going to be the same way for at least a little while, I think.
I would imagine into the new year.
So we will be covering Diamond books essentially a week late. Don't worry too much about it.
Yeah.
All right.
Don't panic.
Let's start with the Alligator Loki holiday special.
Sure.
I don't know if people love... They're trying to make Alligator Loki into Jeff the Landshark.
Yes.
And I don't think he's quite as beloved.
No.
But people do like him.
I like him better than Jeff Landshark.
This is another
Jeff the Landshark is a little piece of shit.
How dare you?
Jeff the Landshark is
the nicest shark ever.
Yeah, that's what you want in a shark, niceness.
This is another silent issue.
Okay.
Alligator Loki doesn't talk.
Oh.
He's just an alligator.
He teams up with Gabby.
Oh, nice.
At the bat. In one of the
I'll see on the back there's an ad for Marvel Mutts next coming in February. That seems to have Lockjaw, Pizza Dog, the Ghost Basset Hound, and Cosmo.
I mean, that's all. That's a very...
So all characters Dave loves. Especially loves Ghost Dog.
That dog has a name.
I don't remember his name.
Is it Batsy?
It might be Batsy.
Something like that. Or is it just Bats?
Might be Bats.
I think it's Bats.
Dave's the biggest fan in the room. He knew the name.
I was just looking at the death of Doctor Strange recently.
I was like, I hate this character.
And it's still, it's what's-his-name writing, so I like the overall drift of it. He didn't create it. Who's the writer? Jed McKay. Jed McKay's been writing Doctor Strange for a little while now. It was dumb Jason Aaron who did the Basset Hound, though, right? During the Jason Aaron run?
I think
run.
He did.
Yeah. Anyway, let's move on to a more pleasant topic than this vile mutts.
Let's talk about Helverine.
I said a more pleasant topic.
Launching with a new series.
Yes.
Did we determine this is a mini-series or an ongoing?
No, this is an ongoing.
Yeah.
Okay.
He had his mini-series, and it went over well enough that they're like, let's give him...
It's sort of a Ken horror book, as I look at it.
Yeah, demonically possessed son of Wolverine as... I'm curious. Is he an anti-hero or is he a villain?
Is he
meeting out justice the way Venom used to sometimes?
I think the Ken is not a villain, but the demon that is inhabiting that can basically take over his body during bouts of time is. Okay. And I think he's trying to figure out how to get rid of him. So there's like kind of the duality of it there. Because I saw he visits
But is
some
he just stopping
mystics.
Him from killing? He's got to go and like kick some ass sometimes. And I assume it's just not always like, hey, there's some kids over there on the street. I'm going to slaughter them. I assume he occasionally protects somebody or does something halfway.
Probably.
Good.
It looks like Doctor Strange is sending him on a mission. So
okay, so go kill those kids. Doctor Strange.
Turns out that would be the second time this week we've seen that. So
no longer the Sorcerer Supreme.
We've got a book that I really liked: TVA, Time Variance Authority Number 1.
It's a bit of an odd Marvel book, but the TVA has been around for a while, big in the Loki show, but they've been around since the 80s?
Yes, they were created in the 80s, but this is very much the...
It's based on the show.
The continuity from the show. Like, this seems to be post-Loki season 2 TVA trying to reform their image, and they've got, Spider-Gwen and an alternate world Wolverine and Captain Carter... And an alternate world Gambit.
That's
and
like what if Captain Carter.
They're sort of using some of the what if versions of characters and alternate timeline characters, and
they're using them as agents for their somewhat
agents,
reformed TVA.
I really liked this, and I thought the art by Perry Perez is particularly good.
I know that name.
I know the name too, but it's fun. You know, I like multiverse stuff. I like alternate versions of characters.
You're definitely
right
a multiverse
right
horror.
So I would recommend the... It was a strange book, but I liked it.
I have a few strange books that I liked this week.
Challenge of the Unknown, number 1. This is more of the Justice League spinoff, essentially.
Yep. They are running the kind of the operations in the Watchtower.
They're like the support crew.
The yep. support crew. But there is kind of an interesting particular mystery in this, which is the, what do they call it, like the dark side aftershock or thunder wave or whatever it
it's
is.
It's probably worth noting. We had a bunch of people asking us, hey, what happens after DC All-In? This is a direct follow-up on DC All-In.
Yeah, they're investigating it. And there's also effects in another number one this week, which we'll talk about in a minute.
Yeah.
But this, yeah, that's they're kind of directly investigating it in this. I feel like the Challengers are kind of like a lesser-known property, but if you never read seen any of the old-school stuff, they were like a, I think, a Kirby creation originally that were in the Fantastic Four mold. They weren't family, but they had that vibe. And they were like adventurers who were like supposed to be just like regular people, but kind of the best in their field. The best test pilot, the best mountaineer, the best science guy.
They're like Olympic medal winners and stuff like that.
And they, you know, had cool like high-tech hovercrafts and stuff like that, and they went on adventures. So they a good fit for kind of like doing the operations of the Watchtower. Seems like a cool idea.
Yeah. And this one, yeah, they're teaming with various superheroes. It's
Mr. Terrific seems to have a mission that they each have to go on, teaming up with a hero. Yep.
This is not related to Justice League, really. It's another DC All-In, but the New Gods.
They do mention though the Dark Side Wave, in there. It's been a while since we've had a New Gods book.
Yeah.
But I think the thing that what makes this notable is that it's written by Rom V, whose star has been rising lately. In particular, that was a pun unintended, but he wrote The Many Deaths of Layla Starr.
Yep.
That was Image? Distillery?
No, Boom.
Boom? Whoever. He's got a knack for the sort of mystical kind of side of storytelling.
I mean, Rom V seems to have something in common with, say, Alan Moore and Neil Gaiman and that kind of thing. And this feels like he feels like the right guy to do a New Gods book.
So this was actually we have new staff picks up this week, by the way. This was my staff pick of the week. I read in an interview with Rom V that he said he wanted to do something a premise similar to the idea of like Hercules in Greek mythology, where you've got like a demigod raised as among humans but with godly powers. So something like that is happening with the like an old god dies and their energy is reborn as a new god on Earth. But there's a mysterious thing going on where Highfather, the good guy opposite of Darkseid, seems to be acting kind of hardcore, and he's like, Orion, go kill the baby. he didn't say it exactly like that, but that was the gist of it.
It's pretty close, yeah.
And Orion's like, all right. Because, he's pretty hardcore that way. There's a very interesting sequence where Orion goes to Earth and consults or talks to Mr. Miracle, Scott Free, and he's like, listen, he's like, I'm going to do this because this is who I am. This is the kind of warrior that I am. And that, that dark side element is part of who I am. He's like, I want you to get this kid out of sight so that I don't have to do it. And I'm like, the actual storytelling, I think, is really interesting. And, of course, Mr. Miracle is like, I'm just trying to take care of my new kid. He's like, I don't have time to, get involved with this thing. But anyway, it's an interesting take. It's something that... early on in this, I was kind of like, this is kind of boring New God stuff. Then when they show the source wall and I hear prophecies, I start to tune out. But once they got to the character stuff and the plot, I was actually pretty interested. So I'm gonna be keeping an eye on you, New Gods.
All right.
It was a great first issue with...
Oh, and the art was really cool,
I was going to say,
the
art's good. Some spectacular art.
Yeah, it's very unusual. Not house style. It looks more... I don't know, esoteric and weird and European.
This guy's depiction of the source wall was very cool.
It was.
We've got the Green Lantern, Green Arrow, World's Finest Special. This is a story from the time when they were the hard-traveling heroes. This is by Jeremy Adams, who was writing Green Arrow recently, right?
I think that's right.
Or was he? No, he's writing Green Lantern.
Yeah.
He's a Green Lantern writer.
So this is meant to be kind of a lost story from when they were traveling across trying to find America and fighting social ills and stuff like that.
And it turns out fighting Deathstroke the Terminator.
Yep. I think it's safe to say that this is sort of, because it's a flashback story, it's an early encounter with Deathstroke.
Does that mean Deathstroke the Terminator is one of the social ills?
They don't get into the social ills quite as much in this. But there's a bit in there. Oh, by the way, hilariously, somebody at this truck stop or convenience store is reading an absolute demon book, like, I guess, like Etrigan. I think that's just the artist having some fun. But yeah, anyway.
That breaks the continuity. They didn't have Absolute Demon in the 1960s.
Oh, that's true. That's true. We better not read it. But yes, kind of a fun throwback. It weirdly connects up with a bit of early Deathstroke history.
Their Deathstroke is like, you know, he's in a black and white version of his costume.
Yep.
He's like
stealth version.
Kind of, yeah, like a re-envisioning of like an early take on the costume.
There's a new Boom book called In Bloom, which appears to be one of their sort of horror books. I didn't get a chance to read this.
I know from making the sign for it. The premise was kind of interesting. Some sort of bacterial infection infects everybody on the Earth, like kind of like Last of Us style, but yeah, like if everybody got it.
Yep.
And like in some people, it might make you grow a new limb. In some people, it might actually change your personality. And they said some people even find themselves communing with some intelligence within their mind now that doesn't seem to be their own. And there is a suggestion, I think, that maybe these things, that like the fungal sort of growths and stuff, do bind people together, kind of like that mycelial network.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, it's all weird stuff. That's the premise of where the world is, but there's also like a murder mystery that's being investigated amidst a society that has just learned to accept it. So much so that even there's this guy early on who's like in the shower and these weird growths start appearing on him and he's like, oh good, I'm undergoing my transformation. What an exciting time. Because like that's just their life now. So if you want to know what it's going to be like when we become fungus people in the future and how it'll change our society, In Bloom is the comic for you.
Okay.
That's
good.
My pitch.
That's a good pitch.
Yeah.
These Horizon missions, the Horizon are like these one-shots they're doing. They're basically the idea of like sort of diversifying old classics.
So who's
like
they in this?
This Image Comics.
Image, okay.
As the artist or the editor, Pornsak Pichichot?
Oh, okay.
You used to work for Vertigo, has written The Good Asian, which is really good.
Okay.
This was his idea, basically, create a protagonist from a marginalized background set in a popular genre. And so the first one was like a Chinese James Bond. They've done a Muslim John Constantine. Right. This one is an Evil Dead for black nerds.
Okay, that sounds fun.
And it is called Motherfucking Monsters.
That might be a little stereotypical. But I appreciate this. This is kind of, I guess, you know, for those complaining about, like, sort of woke this and that.
Yep.
This is a book where, like, that is its premise. Like, it is meant to, like, to straight up reimagine, you know, marginalized people, like, in popular genres. Like, I think that's kind of fun.
Yeah, it's a good idea. We've got three distillery books.
Crazy with big week for him.
Through the Boughs, this is their holiday special.
It's an anthology.
Nick, you said this is really good.
Yeah, there's some exceptional stories in here. Beautiful artwork by talent that I don't know, it's spectacular. There's some creepy stories. There's some heartfelt stories.
Is it all genres? Like, is there a sci-fi Christmas story? Is
there's a little bit sci-fi fantasy.
There might become a fungus person.
There's a horror one. There's by James Tynion, which you would expect.
What's the level of fungus?
There's no fungus.
Okay, just check.
It's like a zero.
That's my new thing.
You need a fungus meter. But there's also one.
A mushrometer.
A story by Sweeney Boo called The Yule Beast. That's very, very good.
That's that legend of the Yule Cat, yeah. Right?
Yes, it is.
For people who know that from internet memes and stuff, or just knowledge of Scandinavian culture.
I know, there have been a ton of these holiday specials. This one I feel like rises to the top a little bit, just for art alone.
What's the title of it?
This is called Through the Boughs, a Yuletide Offering.
Okay.
Then we've got James Tinian's new book, The City Beneath Her Feet.
Yep, this is my pick of the week.
Interesting.
And also Serena's. It's kind of, this is a opening issue that basically features a meet-cute between a floundering writer and an assassin.
And this is by James Tinney, and that's probably the biggest draw to it.
And this is Tinian doing something a little bit different. It's not horror at all.
From what
this
I
is
saw.
Kind of a little slice of life,
but it's also very pop.
It is very pop.
Like, the art is much more pop than, if you think about stuff that his horror stuff, like The Deviant or something like that, with its real grim and dark art. Like, this is like kind of pop electric art. A little bit like Bruce Timm.
A little bit.
Psychedelia.
Yes. That artist's name is Elsa, is it Chartier?
Yeah.
Their artwork is spectacular.
It's really good.
It is just very kind of, This book
it looks
a,
like old 50s, 1950s illustrations and art style, fashion art and stuff.
Weirdly, I can say this book has good vibes. I don't know. It's just fun, entertaining, but... And there's some oddities.
Did you mention the premise about the meat cube where there's like an assassin and stuff?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, I wasn't sure we hit that.
The characters are fun. The story... This is just kind of the opening act. There's definitely an event that happens on the very last page that kind of catapults it into probably a different level of story.
Is this going to be a three-parter like most distillery
stuff?
I would
imagine so.
You're going to recommend it.
I recommend it. I will be buying the trade when it comes out.
Right on.
All right. And the last distillery is Warm Fusion, which is seems to be about... prostitutes, missing limbs, and a murderer, and cybernetics, and a genetic, like some kind of genetic thing going on.
Yeah, it's set in a kind of weird future. It's a little Blade Runner-ish.
Yeah, it's a little Blade Runner-ish.
Let me quick dark run, noir. Ask a question.
Yep.
Fungus level?
No fungus.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Boy, these books are not coming through on the fungus
this
level.
This is a good week for fungus, though, because there was a big fungus book.
Yes.
Yeah.
And when Last of Us hits the show, it's going to go through the roof.
Oh, yeah. No, so this is a Blade, it has some Blade Runner vibes to it.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. A little dark noir, a little future, cybernetics, all that fun stuff. So, it was an interesting ride. I don't know who Scott Hoffman, who is the writer of this, but it was a good entry for him.
Okay.
And then we've got one in the sort of distillery format, but it's actually from Image, called Freddy the Fix.
Yep.
Which is by Garth Ennis and Mike Perkins. I haven't read this. I just got to the first page, which is crazy.
There's some bunker shit in there.
There is.
Did you get just to read this?
No.
I see werewolf. I see a werewolf and a talking dinosaur.
Yep.
And
there's a monster crawling out of a toilet.
Black Lagoon people.
I know this is not the hardest thing in the world to do, but it got a pull quote from Stephen King on the cover.
Oh, okay.
This is not nothing.
There's crabs playing poker.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on in this book. It's very. I didn't get just to read because there was so much to read this week. But it's crazy looking.
It's Garth Ennis.
I bet if I look in that, that's probably got a 5 to 10% fungal level.
Maybe.
I mean,
it's possible.
I'll investigate.
All right, and then we start to come to the stuff that is actually like more issues of things. There's the fifth issue of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which is not, as we thought, might be a All the Turtles Together.
It's elucidating a kind of a new and notable villain.
New villain, and also sort of the fifth turtle, by which I don't mean Jenica. But yeah. Casey.
Yes. Yep. One of my favorite fifth turtles there.
And he's a human. He's the human turtle.
He's the human turtle. But this is an interesting villain story. I found it pretty compelling. It's kind of a different kind of villain. And clearly is going to be a major threat. By the way, this is a minor thing, but the very brief appearance in this of Bebop and Rocksteady, they look so cool.
They do.
It's like the coolest they've ever looked.
I mean, Trump by good. Derek Robertson definitely elevates it.
Yep. Casey does get to be a badass in it.
Yep.
And it does kind of like start to link up and reveals a sort of big thing about the turtles and what's been going on with the brothers and all that. Another good issue from Jason Aaron.
Yeah, for sure. I'm really enjoying this run. Absolute Batman number 3 comes out.
Yep.
That
reveals some big stuff with some of his, well, first of all, his connection with Alfred.
Yep.
Yep.
But also his sort of supporting, some other supporting allies, which were would have been the villains back in the day.
But
like
Edward
Nygma and Selina Kyle and stuff like that, they were now the kids he grew up with and not his foes.
Stuff with his mom is really interesting.
Kind of some big reveals about how the black... what do they call them? Not the black masks.
The party animals.
The party animals operate. Yeah. And some interesting thoughts about like their strategy stuff. It's very kind of like futuristic, weird strategy
basically
tactics.
Basically, the black mask is connected to a weird kind of...
Like a network?
Network controlling things.
Yeah, there's almost some cyberpunk stuff to it.
There's interesting stuff.
Ultimate Spider-Man number 12 wraps up the first issue, first year of that book.
It's like a holiday party.
It's a holiday
issue, right?
Party, yep.
Yeah.
Except for a pretty big stinger towards the end.
It is, yeah, there is. G.I. Joe number 2, which has some big shakeups for the team and a big reveal.
Right, new character. Does more than just the brief appearance that we saw in for the first issue, but actually interacts with him in this. Some Joes are in pretty bad shape, to be honest.
Yep. First mission did not go great.
And there's this... I think we all agree the sort of end stinger reveal is like super cool.
Yeah, it's really good.
Question all along the Watchtower number two. We get a little reveal of what was going on with that teaser at the end.
Yep, I'm continuing to enjoy this. You know, the one thing that I kind of thought was a little weird. Montoya bumps into her old girlfriend, Batwoman, who is implicated in a video thing, and Batwoman is kind of like, oh, how can you believe that of me? And I'm like, they need to just, like, in this superhero world, need to straight up say, there are about a million ways you can fake something like this.
Yeah.
It is, like, Batwoman should have said that. It's not some question of, like, oh, how did you not trust your old girlfriend? Why did you trust the video? Yeah. It's like, well, because, like, any one of our villains can fake this stuff. Or like, that is to say, Batwoman should be able to say, like, we need to, like, go through this with a fine-tooth comb. Question you should know better than to just assume that video is accurate. But I did like this issue. There's a bunch of good supporting player stuff in it. Bulleteer from what was that weird group? Seven Soldiers of Victory. The Grant Morrison edition of that. Get some fun scenes. Who is that? Nightshade?
Yeah.
Who I know best as like a cult superhero who's also been in the Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
Also, but she runs like the bar on the Watchtower.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
She's in Shadow Pact.
Yep.
Yep, that's right. Blue Beetle, both Blue Beetles have a role in this. The Superman Eradicator thing has a role to play in it. And it's a pretty good issue.
We've got Shadow Cabinet number 2, which is the second part of what they're sort of calling Milestone's Kingdom Come. I thought the first issue was really good. I think this issue is even better.
Okay, cool.
If you like the Milestone Universe, if you liked any of it, this is worth a read. Even
That's
if you
cool.
only read the old, watch the old stuff. Long-awaited second issue, Godzilla's Monsterpiece Theater.
One of our little cult breakouts.
Yep,
Tom Skilly's crazy.
Basically,
Godzilla.
This was the Godzilla meets literature in the weirdest way possible.
Yeah, Godzilla versus Great Gatsby.
Yep, but also elements of like Captain Nemo, 20,000 Leagues, Sherlock Holmes. Yeah,
Dracula.
I believe Gatsby, in order to avenge the death of Daisy at the hands of Godzilla, begins assembling other heroes and from literature to battle Godzilla. Yeah. Obviously the right way to stop him.
Yes.
You know, if Mothra and all these others and Rodan haven't stopped him by now, then maybe Sherlock.
Maybe Sherlock Holmes can do it. Yeah. It's pretty fun. It's bonkers, but it's fun. Star Trek Lower Decks number 2, which... is the usual Ryan North's writing this? He's a guy who's written like Squirrel Girl and Fantastic Four and something else that we all liked.
He's got a breadth of writing.
Yeah, and he is doing the usual mix of like in deep canon Star Trek and sort of goofy vibes. And I thought it was a fun issue. If you're feeling the loss of Lower Decks, which I think the Ultimate episode ends this week.
Yep.
This is a good place to go for more of it. It feels right in line with it. Batman and Robin Year 1 number 3 with beautiful art by Chris Samnee, writing by Mark Waid. Issues 3 and 4 of Batman Santa Claus Silent Night Returns, which I've been really liking the series. Jeff Parker really does. There's some really good like superhero moments. He knows how to use like their DC C-listers.
I guess I've only read the first two. I haven't read this one yet, but I was enjoying it once again. So surprising me to find that their canonical DC Santa Claus actually makes for some pretty good stories.
Darkness of Steel All Winter ends this week. I thought it was a great ending.
Oh, nice. They pulled off the ending.
Yeah. And this is one of my best stuff for the year, for sure.
You know, I'm noticing people kind of slowly discovering the original Dark Knights of Steel miniseries. Like, it's a little bit of a slow simmer to get known, whereas Deceased from Tom Taylor was kind of like right out of the gates, was pretty big.
Yeah.
But I'm glad to see this getting some eyes on. I know this isn't all Tom Taylor, but that world he built.
Yeah, it's good. And then I'm still really liking Namor, which came out this week, and Fantastic Four, which had a week.
Jason Aaron Tuesday.
Yep.
He's got his Turtles and his Namors.
It's true. There's two Ryan Norths in here.
Yeah.
These
are prolific.
Yeah. What else we got?
New issue of Nightwing.
Yep.
I thought was Dan Waters continues to do kind of the Bloodhaven gang war pretty well.
I need to check back.
Adding
on
some
that.
Interesting things to the gang called the Teddies. They're big people in kind of furry suits. You know, it's fun. New issue of Immortal Thor. I checked in because of the cover.
Yeah.
It has a awesome team up of villains.
There's some old school Marvel guys who don't get a lot of play otherwise.
Hyde, Cobra, Grey Gargoyle, and Radioactive Man.
Yeah, you have to say Mr. Hyde.
Mr. Hyde, yeah. Sorry.
You didn't go to Mr. School to not be called Mr.
That's true.
I was telling Nick that Mr. Hyde and Cobra as a duo weirdly goes back, I believe, as far as the 60s.
Yeah.
Or at least Cobra does.
That
I know that
true.
I've seen
yeah.
old Kirby art from the Marvel Universe handbook stuff. Of Cobra is drawn by Kirby that look cool. Do you remember this, Randy, where he's like climbing through this pipe that looks like it's just like 3 inches wide, and because his bones all distend and
yep.
freaky.
Yep.
Freaky
Cobra
dude.
Was a cool character.
Did you like the issue of Immortal Thor, Nick?
I did. There was a lot going on that I was like, well, I don't know what that is, but
it's still Al Ewing, right?
Yeah, it's still Al Ewing.
Yeah.
Still good. Third issue of Terminator, which is Terminator in Vietnam.
Yep.
The fourth issue of The Moon is Following Us, which is Daniel Warren Johnson and Riley Rosmo's kind of dreamlike story about a kid suffering from a disease that is like trapped in dreamland.
Okay.
It's a really effective story, and the art by Riley Rosmo, who's, I don't know, he's done a ton of stuff for DC.
He's a bit of an artist kind of person.
I knew him from, what was that Bigfoot book back in the day?
Proof.
Yep.
Riley Rosmo was really good. It was his first book.
Did he also do that Dr. Fate series?
He did.
They had the new Dr. Fate kid. That was pretty good. That was some really good art.
And then I was taken in by a cover for Batman Superman World's Finest. That has Jimmy Olsen, Batgirl, and the Super Pets doing kind of a Scooby-Doo-esque thing.
Oh, that's fun.
It was awesome because in a scene in it, Crypto gets Jimmy to take the Elastic Lad serum,
uh-huh.
so he becomes Elastic Boy again.
That's part of his history.
It was just a lot of fun. Batman and Superman are missing, and they have to find them. And it was a really cool issue.
Oh, that's fun. I occasionally like to read a random issue with no continuity around it.
Yeah.
I've read just stray issues of that series. And what was the one? The last one I read was it had some unusual hero in it. Was it like? Was it Shazam? I forget who it was, but there was one like I read like 3 or 4 months ago, and I was like, that was a really good story.
Yeah.
I don't quite follow it closely enough to like be in on all of it, but you know, one of these days I may pick up some of the graphic novels. We'll see.
But it has a team up with Ace and Crypto, and I'm all about that.
Mark
That's
Waid's
awesome.
Pretty good at that stuff.
Yep. All right, I think that's it for comics.
Yep.
Let's take a break. We're going to talk about some trailers and some other stuff.
Cool.
All right, we've got some trailers to talk about, but first let's talk about the little bit of news we had, which is that there's a Clayface movie coming.
Maybe. Possibly.
Written by Mike Flanagan, but he's too busy to direct it.
Yep. So that's Mike Flanagan, who you may know from like a bunch of horror miniseries like Haunting of Hill House, Haunting of Bly Manor, Midnight Mass, and movies like, what, Dr. Sleep, and I don't know.
Gerald's Game.
Gerald's Game and stuff like that. Yeah, so he's one of our favorites. We've talked about him often.
He is a favorite, for sure.
He always brings the characters in the story. And it seems weird. Like the DC Universe has not really, except for like Creature Commando, it's not really there yet. We haven't even seen the first live-action thing. Supposedly a trailer for
Superman trailer on Thursday.
Dropping on this Thursday. And yet they're like already discussing a Clayface movie. And you're like, is this the next Morbius?
It does feel a little like...
But here's the thing. Flanagan is a different beast.
I'm sure that Flanagan will write a good script, but he's not directing it. And even if he was, I don't want this right now. I think, Dave, you talked about this, and it's like, maybe
I don't
a few
think
years
I want
line.
It, but if what they're doing is, like, I listened to a somewhat lengthy interview with James Gunn about a year ago where he was talking broadly about his plans for the DCU. And he was talking to, it was Michael Rosenbaum's podcast?
Yeah.
So it was in there. And he said that he did think that superhero movies were stagnating a little bit lately. And I think the way he put it was, he wasn't like naming names about like that or trying to really impugn anyone. But he said he felt that some of them were, like, I think, appearing on inertia. Like, well, they expect this movie, so we will release this movie and make this movie. But they weren't, like... His thing was, like, we have to have a story to tell. And that's like, his golden rule is, like, there has to be a good story to tell. And if his DCU, like, we already know it looks a little weird, you know, the early introduction of the Authority.
Yeah, it's odd.
The, what do you call it?
Tom King's Supergirl? It is a weird slate of projects to start with.
It's a somewhat weird slate, but if we go by his watchword, which is, there's got to be a strong underlying script and concept to it, then I'm like... In that world, a dark but very human depiction of, like, the tragedy of Clayface or whatever by Mike Flanagan is the kind of thing that could work. Like, do I think he could write a good movie? Yes. Is it weirdly too early to even be thinking about that? Also seems like yes,
I suppose.
I think the DC is going to be weirder and less worried about continuity than the Marvel one.
I suppose I might be a bit of a cynic, but given... that everything we've seen Zaslav do at the head of WB, Gunn is a bit of a team player. I really do think that he was brought on and they were like, here is your agenda. And he was forced to work with it. Like, I have a feeling there were a lot of deals made before he had any say in it. Things like Clayface. And I think he is just, things he's going, he's like, yes. And he's trying to make it all make sense. But I feel this feels like a patchwork that some studio executive dreamed up.
Maybe. I don't know. I would think that studio execs tend to play it safe and want to do things like
Batman.
Let's follow what's already worked.
Yeah.
Or let's do the exact same style as Marvel, start small, build to the Justice League, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. And, like, so I think it's actually bucking some trends in a weird way that I don't know if it's going to work. But yeah. I actually, you know, James Gunn is a team player, but I'm also taking him somewhat at his word here. I don't think he's particularly known to be just like a PR flack or anything like that.
Yeah, I don't know. It feels weird to me. Nick, where are you on this?
I agree. It's definitely weird. I don't know if it's what I would... They announced it, but they've announced a whole slate of things.
Yeah. Like, Batman hasn't even had a villain yet.
Yeah.
And let alone a villain that we're going to give a whole movie to because he's sad.
Yeah.
And essentially, they've announced an entire slate of films and Clayface wasn't on it. That probably means Clayface is not coming out until 2027. And
I would say that'd be the earliest.
Yeah.
And
lots can happen between that.
Yeah. So this is with a grain of salt, but Flanagan writes a good script.
Yeah,
He was very excited for it. Like, in the quotes and stuff in it, he's into it.
Apparently, he's been wanting to do one for a while because he likes kind of the elements of Clayface's backstory. Sure. He can kind of connect with them.
I guess I'd rather he just do a story that's like a Clayface with the serial cylinders fall off, and just do his horror version and do it for himself.
Maybe
Batman. Maybe he likes money.
I mean, that's who doesn't. But I mean, he's also involved.
He's doing
in
all right.
He's involved in the new Exorcist thing, and he's also doing the Dark Tower.
He may have looked at something like Joker, which is clearly basically a standalone project, and I think that's what the idea is for this too.
Yeah,
it's kind of something. What's that?
But not Joker 2.
That was a flop. That lost him like $100 million.
Right, that was a flop. But I've already heard it being reassessed. I've already heard Tarantino standing up for it and stuff like that.
It hit HBO. I can watch it for free, and I don't think I will.
I'll probably catch it. I'm curious enough. What was the point I was going to make?
You're talking about Joker, and
Well, I was just like, this may almost be his own standalone project, but I guess it would be. I mean, it's still going to be DC.
Yeah,
I think you know, there's always people who would like to still like play in the playground, even if they're on the weird periphery of it.
That's my kind of confusion a little bit is that DC is. I don't want them to be like Sony. I don't want them just to make a mess of movies that are all over the place. I think some cohesion.
I think they're
going to
make a mess of movies that maybe all.
I think cohesion has to be there in order for them to, not to completely copy Marvel, but I think that is going to be some sort of a blueprint. Just they're building a world, right. and to have just all these like 16 other things that are happening, kind of an Elseworlds type thing, is going to be massively confusing.
Right, but it may be like they'll have what Superman is next year.
Yes, 2025.
And this would be like several years out. That, presumably,
right.
If they do
we'll
it. And maybe at that time it'll feel more normal. I do think, like, we definitely, like, I think, want something of the shared universe. And I think they are doing something in the shared universe, but Gunn has already said something about, like, he is less concerned with canon than I think, say, Marvel was.
Right. Yeah.
So, we'll
see.
He's got a lot of proving to do, and the possibility of being able to do it, but he does have to do it.
Yep.
All right. So let's talk about Intergalactic: The Heretic Prophet, or specifically the trailer for said, which is the next Naughty Dog game by Neil Druckmann, who did Last of Us.
He wrote the show too, right?
He worked the show as well.
We don't tend to cover a lot of video game trailers.
We don't,
but there was a bunch of interesting ones released lately. This one seems like it's very buzzworthy, and people want to comment. And Randy, before I heard anything about like this getting any backlash,
yeah,
I was just like, a friend of mine posted this, and I was like, that was a great trailer.
Yeah, and then you posted it, and I looked, and I was like, yeah, that's a great trailer. I don't really care about the backlash. Who cares what incels think?
Yeah, yeah.
What I think is interesting is after watching the trailer, I looked, and so this is an action-adventure game set thousands of years in the future in an alternate universe where advanced space travel existed by 1986. So
it's meant to be thousands of years in the future, but there's still 1986-ish tech.
I can't quite figure that out. It says for 600 years, this planet that she goes to has been cut off from the outside contact. But everything we know is in this four-minute trailer, and people are speculating.
Okay. So it looks more like an alternate universe, you know, in the same way that Fallout is, what's it 60s. Generally set in, like the 60s, 70s, yeah, yeah. And stuff like that. But in an alternate timeline where there was like higher levels of technology in the Cold War than there actually was
over retrofuturism
robots kind of. And stuff like that. So this feels like it could be 1986 if we had gone into like space travel had been established decades prior. Somehow,
like the space race was like the race for faster than light technology, yeah, or something like that.
And so what it shows is the interior of a spaceship, a small ship that we'll learn is a bounty hunter ship.
Yep.
And this kind of tough chick looking chick who's some Asian lady who is shaving her head.
Yep.
She got tattoos. She looks like a bounty hunter.
Yep.
It's some actress, I think, doing the visual modeling, but it's not somebody who I immediately knew, but I know some people who are like, oh, it's blank. I love her.
Yeah. She's in, Nick probably knows her because she was in, Sabrina. I think you are Sabrina.
Yeah. She's the kind of,
She played Prudence.
Yeah, Prudence, who's kind of like the evil. She's not evil, but
she was. Oh, no, I know her too because I watched that. She was also on the 100, and she was on the Netflix series You, and she voiced the character in the Owl House.
Okay, she's on the ship, and there's lots of little visual details to start giving you hints of things.
She's watching anime.
Her ship has the Porsche logo on it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
First of several bits of like sort of 80s era branding.
She's wearing Adidas.
Adidas, yep. She gets a call from like her agent.
Yeah, yeah. Her agent.
An eye patch lady smoking a cigarette because it's the 80s, or seems like the 80s.
Well, we got like a minute of that character, and I love that character.
Yeah, yeah. She's clearly already kind of had it up to here with our bounty hunter person.
That's a great bit where she's like, just book this, or I'll get another agent. And she turns, just kind of mutters, she's like anybody else would deal with your shit.
Yeah.
That was great.
Yeah, spoken under the breath and the detail on all the character animation on this is like next level.
Also, doesn't hurt that apparently the score is Trent Reznor and Agus Ross.
Yeah,
yeah.
And then they close it out with a Pet Shop Boys track, which is not an obvious needle drop. It's a really good one.
Yep. She's talking to her agent. She wants, there's a certain person she's looking for, and they've got a lead on, but it's on this very dangerous planet, which seems like it's going to be where the game is mainly set, like, and be kind of like a melee combat sword, future kind of glowy saber type swords. If you're eagle-eyed, people will spot that that person is played by Kamal Nanjiani.
Yep. Apparently another member of the Five Aces, which we think she is also maybe one of them.
Yeah, whoever they were. Space explorers.
Is also Tony Dalton, hunters. Who played the swordsman on Hawkeye.
Oh, interesting.
And
who
was also in Better Call Saul in a very different role. He's great. And so they've got some notable voice cast for this.
Nice.
Yeah, the agent reluctantly agrees to give her the location and take the offer, she activates this thing, which is like a big CD changer with what looks like hundreds of CDs, but 80s era style CDs. Yep. It drops on a Pet Shop Boys album, and they play the song It's a Sin, really good song. As she goes into like what looks like hyperspace to get to the planet. That's pretty much the trailer. There's a very brief glimpse of what looks like, you know, the actual gameplay with kind of a, her fighting like this mech, almost quasi-organic looking mech on another planet. Anyway, all the talent involved, the quality of the voice acting, and, you know, the amount of character and detail in just this 4 minutes, I was very impressed.
This is a really great trailer.
I want to play it.
Yep. Y'all will have to come to my house and play it.
I'm hoping that the sheer number of CDs means that this game is going to have an 80s new wave and synth-driven soundtrack.
Yeah.
Incidentally, I did love the kind of eerie stuff from Trent Reznor early on.
Also good, yeah.
It reminded me of, like, you know, Vangelis on Blade Runner, or if people know Tangerine Dream, another one of those kind of new agey sort of but very cool soundtracks in the 80s. So, yeah, very on the radar.
For sure. All right, let's real quick talk about a couple of Christmas movies, or a bunch of Christmas movies, because it is the week before Christmas.
Yep,
yep.
Nick, you watched two new ones, Red One and Carry On.
Yes.
Both have been on my radar.
Yeah, Red One was in theaters for a little bit, now it's on Prime, stars The Rock and Chris Evans. Rock plays the head of Santa's elf security, and someone kidnaps Santa, played by J.K. Simmons. This kind of got panned by a lot of people, and I don't know.
I remember when we talked about the trailer, and we were like, this looks fun.
Yeah.
And you know, none of us are like, I think we're all a little soured on The Rock, or just a little bored with him lately.
Yeah.
But as a Rock outing goes, it looked fun.
And Chris Evans is kind of a naughty hacker kind of guy who basically causes Santa to be kidnapped, so to repent, he kind of helps.
Okay.
It has definitely Christmas vibes. It has good action.
Does it compare to
snowmen?
Well, it's not like hardcore, like what was it, Violent Night or whatever last year, which was like the brutal diehard of Santa
movies.
This
is definitely the more family friendly.
Is it
tale.
More indeed more like something like Jumanji?
A little bit, but it incorporates some actual like weird Krampuses in there.
Yep. I've heard that Krampus is one of the best parts of the movie.
Krampus is played by Torun from
Game of Thrones.
Right. Yes. He is great in it. There is a slapping game, of course, which is Krampus' favorite game.
Right.
Not going to try to pronounce the name of the game because I can't. The other one, it's worth your time. If you like the Christmas Chronicles... it's kind of in that vibe.
Yeah.
Okay. The Kurt Russell.
I don't like the Christmas Chronicles. I
thought you did.
I begrudgingly like some of it, but I'm mostly annoyed it's not what I wanted it to be, and I feel like that's what Red One's going to be for me.
Yeah, that's possible.
I mean, I'm going to be like, the trailer promised me one thing, and what I got was something not as good.
Yeah.
That is my fear.
Yeah, it's possible.
Because that is 100% what Christmas Chronicles gave me.
Yeah. The second movie I watched was just only tangentially Christmas. It's in the takes place at Christmas time.
I've heard people saying it's like Die Hard, basically.
Yeah, it's a little bit Die Hard. It is about a kind of on the ropes TSA agent.
What's this called?
It's called Carry On.
Uh-huh.
It's on Netflix. Premiered.
I've heard about it. Yep.
It's suspense thriller about a TSA agent basically being conned by a very conniving. Individual played by Jason Bateman to basically let a bag go through checkpoint security that may or may not have something problematic. It's got elements of Phone Booth, so if you ever watched that, the Colin Farrell and Kiefer Sutherland.
A surprisingly fun little thriller.
It's a confined area set in an airport.
Yep. But not full Die Hard, right?
Not full Die Hard.
Shooting and killing.
There is some leaping and shooting and killing because there's lots of stuff. I think the most notable element of this is Jason Bateman going against type and playing an actual, like... menacing bad guy.
Oh man, that has my attention.
And he does a really good job, as you can imagine, as a talker.
I can see him playing a great bad guy.
He is the element, but the guy who plays the main character is Taron Egerton, who was the Kingsman.
Kingsman.
So he does a really good job. This feels like a 90s 2000 thriller throwback. And I mean that in the best possible way.
Yeah.
Because higher production values than expect, higher storytelling and writing than you expect. The actors across board do a good job. I don't think there was an element in here that I was like, I was not pleased by in some way.
Okay.
And there were some twists and turns I wasn't expecting. Okay. So, I definitely think if you're looking for kind of a good way to spend an hour and 45 minutes, you could find much worse movies.
Okay, all right, yeah, I'm curious to check it out. I saw, like, Rotten Tomatoes, they're like, it has higher ratings than Die Hard, and I'm like, okay, come on.
Yeah, that's dumb.
Yeah.
On the weird, yes, Rotten Tomatoes scale, sure, but...
So, it's funny because you say Jason Bateman, and I also watched a Christmas special with Jason Bateman in it.
Oh, did you?
That was Murderville, Who Killed Santa.
Oh.
Do you know? I know I talked about Murderville at one point a few years
ago. Yeah, yeah. I've watched a couple of episodes.
So, Murderville is it's an improv comedy show, essentially. Will Arnett, who was on a podcast I started listening to and maybe reminded me of it. I was looking for a Christmas show to watch. It wouldn't be like a full hour long.
Right.
And so they had a Christmas special. Will Arnett plays Detective Terry Seattle, and he is a sad sack divorcee, gruff talking, hard nosed homicide cop.
Yep.
Who gets partnered with a new partner every episode, and this new partner is always a comedian or someone who doesn't have a script.
Right.
So there's a script, and there's a murder, and the other person has to play themselves as a trainee as they work with Terry Seattle to solve the murder.
Mm-hmm.
The trainee in this case was Jason Bateman.
Yeah.
Who comes to his apartment on Christmas Eve, and then they have to go to deal with a mall Santa, or basically a fake Santa being murdered at City Hall before the orphans get there. And the mayor is like, you have to solve this murder before the orphans find out there's no Santa, or my career is over. And so they go from there.
Check, the person playing the rookie...
The trainee does not have a script.
Essentially, they are improvising in a loose script.
As if they were a homicide partner, yes.
Okay, got it.
And what's hilarious about it is because if you're the type of person who cannot stand watching people break doing comedy, you will hate this show.
Yeah.
Because half of the fun, Jason Bateman, when they kill the Santa, he realizes it's Sean Hayes, actor Sean Hayes, the guy who played Jack.
Yeah.
And he's like, he turns to Terry Seattle. He's like, you dragged Sean Hayes into this? And then Terry is like, oh, he might be alive. You got to give him mouth to mouth. And Jason Bateman's game for anything. And Sean Hayes is supposed to be dead and is cracking up and turning his head, trying to avoid...
Oh, wow. I thought that they... So I wasn't sure if they also would, like, do a new take or anything like that if, like, things... Is this all one take, essentially?
I don't know.
Like, these scenes?
I think they just run with it. It's funny.
It.
I didn't know that they were kind of allowed to sort of break character a little bit like that.
It's also... It's a little bit game showy because the concept is at the end... The trainee has to pick who the murderer is out of the three suspects they've been predicting. It's very much a Law and Order riff and that kind of thing.
Okay.
So they did all the things. After they introduced their second suspect, he's like, the mayor character is like, we need fresh eyes on this. And they bring in Maya Rudolph as a new trainee, and Maya Rudolph has a game for anything.
Yeah.
And she just goes right into it, even though she hasn't. She doesn't know who the other suspects are, but she's brought in for an interrogation. And Terry's like, okay, you're going to be good cop, bad cop. And they go in and they do the good cop, bad cop. And they're doing that. And he's like, now switch it up. And they switch which one of you is bad cop and good cop. And they just switch. And he's like, okay, now Italian cop and a German cop. And he's like, singing cop. And it's hilarious.
Oh, man.
Sounds like my worst nightmare. Improv just scares the hell out of me.
They also had to bring in Pete Holmes at the very end. Not Pete Holmes. Who's the guy who dates everyone? Pete...
From Saturday Night Live.
Yeah,
Pete
Saturday
Davidson.
Night. Pete Davidson at the very end, who has met none of the suspects, and they want him to weigh in on who did it. And it was really fun. It's totally worth a watch. Murderville in general is hilarious, but the Christmas special was great.
Oh, okay. So is it still going, or did they just
it's a few years old now at this point.
Nick, I have to rewind for just a second. On the improv front, now, could you watch Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Yeah, I mean, just like the idea, I put myself in their shoes, and I'm like, I can't do that. That just scares me.
They seem to be having a great time. There's one bit where Jason Bateman, he's trying to calm down a suspect who just needs to see her cat, and he's like, be a cat, get down there, lick the bowl, lick the milk out of the bowl. And Jason Bateman's like, he's like, yep, payback's gonna be fun. I got a lot of time to think about
I have, this reminds me of the fun of, I once saw one of those, like, an improv Shakespeare group.
Yeah.
And it was super hilarious. They would, like, before it began, they asked the audience for some, like, themes or whatever that they should do. Yeah. Okay, what's a good title for this? And, you know, the audience throws it all out, and so they got to work it up based on that.
Yeah.
And they would mess with each other, of course, in the best improv tradition. Yeah. And so at some point, one of them was like, it's like, you know, forsooth, he's like, you know, I will be glad to hear the backstory of your life, sung in verse as you are known for doing. And the guy looked at him just like, fuck
I highly recommend Murder Vault. In particular, if you're not going to watch the Christmas episode, watch the episode with Marshawn Lynch. Okay. You wouldn't think that with all the comedians and actors coming in, but football star Marshawn Lynch, who I'm not entirely sure knows it's a gag, is delightful.
Okay.
Sure.
I then watched, I was trying to do like one per day of Christmas movies and stuff. I didn't manage that, but I got pretty close. I watched like 15 things.
You still got a couple more days.
I got a couple more days. I watched my what is now my, it was a Trinity and now it's a top five. I watched Netflix's Claws, which I think we've all seen.
Claws.
The animated one on Netflix?
Have not seen
it. Oh, you should see it. It's great.
I should see that.
Yeah, I've only watched it once.
I also want to see that one I think you were just a little lukewarm on, but the one with Will Ferrell and whoever.
Spirited. Spirited. I talked about that last week.
See what I think.
I watched Elf. Got to show that to someone for the first time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she'd never seen it. She enjoyed it. That's impressive. I didn't know that was fun.
Elf I really like.
Watched Christmas Vacation, which always holds up for me. I know Dave's not a fan.
I used to love it. I used to absolutely adore it. I still enjoy it, but man, the Chevy Chase thing is really affected
it. But this is Chevy Chase at his peak.
I know. Yeah. He's such a curmudgeonly.
Yeah, I mean, I'm also rewatching Community right now. I'm watching the gas leak season the first time ever.
Oh.
And just remembering how terrible Chevy Chase was to everybody on that show.
Yeah.
But it was also occasionally funny.
It was.
But so I'm like, yeah, this is Chevy Chase at his peak. This is like Fletch and that kind of Chevy Chase.
This is everybody at some of their top game. The Julia Louis-Dreyfus stuff is still amazing.
It is weirdly horny for what is a family-friendly Christmas special.
I mean, the vacation movies always
It's PG-13.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
The first movie was actually rated R.
I think it was,
And had, like, topless Beverly D'Angelo.
Well, and also the lady in the pool.
Oh, right. Who was that? Billy Joel's wife, Christy Brinkley?
Yeah,
but she's not naked in it. You never actually see her.
No.
Yeah. But then they made European Vacation, which also has nudity, but was PG-13 because it was the 80s.
Yes.
And
Christmas Vacation has the illusion of nudity.
Implied nudity, but no actual nudity.
Right, because the Malikilikimaka.
Yeah,
the...
yeah. There's a lot of horny in there.
Yes, there's.
I watched Scrooged, which I always love Scrooged. It's probably my favorite Christmas carol. I love Bill Murray. Bill Murray's the same way as Chevy Chase. I'm like, yeah, I know he's kind of an asshole, but...
Right.
He was funny at his peak, and this is definitely his peak. Karen Allen's great in it.
The scenes with Carol Kane just crack me up.
Carol Kane kills
she's
it.
Just you know just who steals else? The show.
Buster Poindexter.
Yeah, he
is
a good
great
job.
In this.
I have only seen this movie once.
Yeah, it's worth a watch.
It was quite good. I liked it. I actually kind of expected to not like it, and I was like, that's really pretty good.
Yeah. Also, Alfred Woodard
and
Bobcat Goldthwait.
Yeah, yeah.
Bobcat Goldthwait kind of.
Who directed?
Richard Donner.
Yeah.
Richard Donner, man. It seems like things really came together on that one.
It's a great movie. I watch it every year. And I've seen it probably 30, 35 times now. And it always gets me at the end. Like, it's got that little emotion to it, too. And then I watched Noelle, which is kind of the diet elf. It's it's Anna Kendrick playing Santa's daughter. And she her brother, who has just been made Santa, played by Bill Hader, flees to Arizona. She chases him down. And
he doesn't want to be Santa,
and she
does Santa die?
Santa dies.
Okay, I couldn't remember if he was just
family.
Like
it's a family, like it's a family business. Legacy.
He doesn't want to be it, so he wants to be a yoga instructor instead.
Yeah. Mrs. Santa is Julie Haggerty from Airplane. She's great in that.
It is. She's really good.
The girlfriend from there. That's crazy. I don't know if I ever realized that. I remember watching this, and it was surprisingly fun. It was for Elf Light. It's pretty good. It has that sincerity that Elf does.
Yep.
Anna Kendrick has quality.
Still a lot of the reason
very,
it works.
She's very good as a cute elf.
Yeah, yeah. Super fun. Those are my every year I watch these. Then I went back and watched Phineas Ferb Christmas Vacation. I don't know if you guys remember Phineas and Ferb.
I remember. I didn't watch it, though.
I mean, my kids were at the age where I watched a ton of... And basically, the plot of Phineas and Ferb is that there's two kids... They are sort of geniuses. They invent things. They have wild adventures.
Kind of Dexter.
Their teenage sister is always trying to catch them. And this was the, like, somehow their town had been called naughty, and so they have to take up the role as Santa.
Okay.
And it's fun. It's a lot of fun. It's got a good musical bit in it. I forget who the guy who makes it is, but I think he's a guy from a band or something. But they've got some good music and stuff in it. So that was fun to revisit. And then I would think the non-Christmas movies, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Yep.
Which I got to show that to somebody who'd never seen it the first time, and she liked that.
I feel like everybody should try out Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. It's one of those great Shane Black movies.
And you don't have to watch it at Christmas, but it takes place at Christmas.
Right.
Kind of catapulted Robert Downey Jr. back into
It was his pre-Iron Man. Yeah, it was his big comeback. Val Kilmer's great in that, too. The two of them together.
Yeah, it's a buddy flick.
Yeah, it's a buddy cop movie. Yeah, for sure. And then I watched Go, which I loved. Go, it's like a 1999 movie, I think.
Yeah, it was.
It was a Pulp Fiction knockoff. There are a lot of those. But it's done by Doug Liman.
Yep.
And it was my first intro to Taye Diggs.
Timothy Oliphant.
Sarah Pauly.
Yeah.
Along with like a bunch of 90s sitcom stars. So you got like, what is it, Jay Moore, the guy, Scott Wolf.
Yeah.
And what's her name from Dawson's Creek?
Claire Danes? No.
Oh, she plays Claire in the movie. But
right.
I don't remember her name. She was married to Tom Cruise at one point.
Yeah, with the dark hair.
Yeah.
Katie Holmes.
So they were like the anchors, and then they had these new actors who actually turned out to be amazing. And it's just a sequence of like grocery store workers who wind up sort of scamming a drug dealer and going to a rave because one of them is trying not to get kicked out of her appointment, and then or her apartment, and the other ones go to Vegas and have wild adventures there. But it takes place during Christmas.
Yeah, it does.
There's a Christmas-themed rave. And I watched it expecting it to not age particularly well. It was a lot of fun. It has a great soundtrack. It's a ton of fun to watch. If you liked Pulp Fiction and you want something that's like a pretty good knockoff, Go is worth a watch.
Didn't the soundtrack include like Fatboy Slim and a little slice of the late 90s?
It's a really good sort of late 90s soundtrack. Yeah.
Are there any holiday movies you're going to try to watch the next week?
No.
Dave, watch one with me.
That is true. That is true. But I'm not pursuing holiday movies today or this year.
We watched *End of the Apocalypse*.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
I need to give that another shot.
It's so good.
I have only like I liked it from the start, but it is actually grown in my esteem.
Same.
Even. So yeah, give it a shot at some point, Nick.
There's a few off-kilter horror or like Christmas movies I'm going to try to watch. So I'm going to rewatch *Violent Night*.
Yeah, I'm going to try to watch that again.
I'm gonna give Anna the Apocalypse another go, and we did our yearly rewatch of Krampus, which I adore that movie.
I like Krampus. I am watching the Disney Plus Hawkeye miniseries right now, since that is kind of, it's like Christmas adjacent.
Yeah,
it's definitely
yeah.
set during Christmas and yep. has some themes.
It feels like a lost Shane Black project.
I just kind of wasn't looking necessarily for a full Christmas movie.
I binged all of Hawkeye again. I watch that every year. I love Hawkeye. It's one of my favorite characters, and I thought the Disney Plus series was a great version of it.
Yeah.
And if someone were to come and check out our staff picks right now, they might even see Randy depicted as Hawkeye.
Serena gave us all Christmas presents.
Yep.
She drew us as favorite characters as our new pick sign. So, yes.
Yeah, very, very cool.
When you see our picks this week, you will see who our favorite characters are.
It's true.
If you don't already know. Although, I don't know if that's actually your favorite character, Nick, or just one.
Probably not my favorite character, but it's the one that...
Because she was trying not to let on, and she's like, what character you identify
with? We can say. Mine is, like, cult character Wonder Man from the Avengers, primarily. And
Colossus.
Nick is Colossus,
and
yep.
I'm Hawkeye, and Serena is Squirrel Girl.
Who she has cosplayed as.
Yes, she has. Yes. And Jeanette is playing here, she's cosplayed as.
Right.
Black Cat.
Yes.
Yep.
Which is also a big favorite character of hers.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we had a couple things left over from last week that we might could tackle real quick. Dave, do you want to revisit Babylon 5?
Oh, yeah, but I was going to pull up the story to remind myself of the plot points in it. I don't have it handy.
Okay.
I'll muddle through it, though.
Okay.
This was a Babylon 5 animated movie that came out like a year ago. I think it was about exactly a year ago.
Yeah.
And... After initially seeing the stuff that looked like it was probably computer generated animation with cel shading over it, but that looked pretty solid, like a little stylized, but solid. I then remember it kind of just disappeared with it, like and never really got much attention. And I was like, it probably wasn't very good, you know. To be honest, most of JMS's revisits of Babylon 5, you know, whether it's Crusade or some of the other like the movies and things that happen afterwards, have not been the best. But I was just in the mood for some like Babylon 5 nostalgia, and it actually delivered on it. I watched it on Amazon Prime.
Dave, this is interesting because I looked it up to see what the so he gets unstuck in time.
Sheridan, the captain of the station,
because they're looking at an advanced power station that uses tachyons.
Yep.
And he jumps.
And I think because he had done some time travel stuff earlier, he was susceptible to it.
So he jumps in the future, and there's an older Dr. Franklin, the character who died, the actor who died.
One of the first things I really liked in it, because I always liked Dr. Franklin.
And so they formulate a plan. He's going to find Zathras and obtain a time stabilizer, which ties into B4. That's a really good plot, as the hang a central
thing. It is. And Zathras is a somewhat ridiculous but fun sort of... how would you even describe his character? And like, I mean, I think people know of Babylon 5 as a cult early to mid 90s show about a space station in a kind of a fairly realistic future where they didn't have artificial gravity to like have the gravity on the station. The different sections of it, because it was all kind of a giant cylindrical thing, had to rotate to create the artificial gravity, and it'd be heavier in some places and lighter in some places. There was a lot of thought put into that. The ships used real physics in the early CG and stuff like that. But it was, and half the story was told from like the command crew of the station, and half the story involved like the ambassadors of various alien races trying to keep a peace in a galaxy that would soon be torn apart by war. And so this is after all the big events of that have happened, and the captain kind of goes to some alternate universes as he's bouncing around, where he glimpses alternate ways things could have panned out.
I saw a little. I was trying not to learn too much, but I did look through the wiki and saw some of them. And I gotta say that the fact that you liked it and that I saw that has now intrigued me, and I'm gonna put this on my wish list.
I really there are sound-alikes for most of the actors, because of course Babylon 5 has a weirdly high mortality rate.
Yeah,
many of the actors in it have passed away. But I liked almost all the sound-alikes. They did a very good job. And, of course, you have a few like Claudia Christian and the guy playing Sheridan. Bruce Boxleitner.
Yeah.
People know him from Tron, too.
Yep.
Doing great work. Let's see. The guy who played Londo died, right?
I believe he did. Actually, Jakar definitely died.
Yeah, I think Londo...
I think Londo Peter Drasik might still be alive.
It sure sounded like him, but it might have been somebody... He's so imitable.
That is true. We've all got a Malari impression in us somewhere.
But yes, like he is in a sequence where he is
still alive.
Oh, okay, so that must have been him. Yep. That's so cool. He was like one of the great characters on the show.
Yeah, he was.
An aging ambassador from a race that was clearly meant to be tantamount to like an aging British Empire, failing British Empire, desperate to cling to power. And you know, it's funny. All those Babylon 5 things, especially things that I thought were kind of a little hokey and over the top, this political maneuvering, thuggish fascists, and things like that, all proved to be totally accurate.
It turns out, man, Dave, I'm looking through the list of cast of the audio, and it's like John Sheridan, Susan Ivanova, Londo Mollari, all the original voices, Lanier, Bill Mumy, that dude's has been around for a long time.
Yep.
He was a kid when he first started.
Yep.
And then Patricia Tallman and Tracy Scoggins, who are Lita Alexander and Elizabeth Loxley, kind of secondary characters.
Yep, but one of them became the captain of the station.
Everyone else died.
I know.
Garibaldi, Jakar, Franklin, Sheridan,
right.
DeLynn.
And this is like...
Zathras!
This came around at the same time as roughly as Deep Space Nine. They were kind of rival space station shows. they just, for whatever reason, I don't think it's a curse, but these people might have smoked a lot of cigarettes or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's weird.
But anyway, just a real quick sum it up. It is, I think, something of a victory lap, but it's kind of wholesome in its way. It does show some dark stuff, like, you know, the Shadows, which were one of the central foes.
At least one timeline where they won.
Although it's handled with a bit of dark humor.
Okay.
So
you said you like the animation, didn't bother you?
I like the animation.
Because this feels a little bit like what they're with Marvel What If, where it took me a while to plug into it, but I wound up liking it.
It is not on the level of Marvel What If.
Okay.
But it is good, I think.
Okay.
And there's a few sequences that are really quite cool. There are some kick-ass action sequences, some last stands, and things like that, and just like if you're nostalgic for the show, this will probably tweak some buttons. It also has the kind of hokey humor that JMS is known for.
Yeah.
Very regularly.
Yeah.
At least in one case where I was like, oh, why would you do that? Why, this was a very serious scene and you said something so stupid.
So let me ask
you,
Dave.
But I kind of enjoyed the experience.
It's not streaming anywhere.
Yeah.
So is this a rent for $4 or buy for $15?
It was, I rented it for $4, I guess. I don't know for sure if I'd consider it worth buying.
Like, you're going to ever watch it again.
But, yeah, maybe so. Yeah, that's... I would say possibly.
The thing is, like, I'm just doing the math, and if I watch it three times, I should buy it.
Right?
And, like, is this a...
Three times
I saw it, or I might watch this when I rewatch Babylon 5.
It's a little closer to I'm glad I saw it, but I could see myself watching it twice. Three times might be stretching it.
See, Dave, you should have bought it, and then you watch it twice, and then be like, hey, Randy, you should come over and watch it. And then we would have had that three times. The magic three times.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But you didn't, Dave. And now we're both going to rent it.
Or did I buy it and it was a Black Friday sale?
We're punks. We're Apple's bitches.
I might have bought it, like...
Yeah, suck it, Apple.
I might have it. I don't know. I'll look into it. I'll look into it.
All right.
We'll have a B5 party.
That will wrap it up for us. As Dave said at the outset, thank you all for listening this year. We assume most of you are customers, so thank you for shopping with us.
Yep. But even if you're just a weird spy, thanks for indulging us.
Thanks for being a weird spy. Thanks for putting together a profile to get us all thrown in camps next year.
Yes.
And we hope you all have a happy holiday season.
Yep.
And that we see you in this year and the new year.
Yep.
And until next time,
Yo, Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.